And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
Okay with them.
Beautiful. Welcome.
Thank you. This is nerve-wracking and exciting.
Oh, don't be. We should say who you are first. Julie Parisi.
So I'm Julie Parisi, and I just finished my certification as a Safe Conversations Workshop Leader and Facilitator, which I am really, really excited about.
I'm John. This is Home From Here. Thought I should add that.
Yes.
What you're doing is so mission critical for us on literally every level. And before we get into how do you think we got here? How do you think we got to the place where, because I have a couple theories, how do you think we got to a place where we even have to be taught again how to listen?
Well, I'll tell you what Harville Hendricks said. He and his wife are the founders of Safe Conversations.
I used to work for Harville Hendricks.
You know him.
I promoted his book. I didn't work for him. I promoted his book.
Oh, how cool is that?
The first one, the relationship book.
Right, right. That's how they started.
Right.
And then they've kind of moved, shifted in. They're still doing that, but they've also shifted it into those processes, but for the broader population.
Mm-hmm.
So for it's applicable anywhere.
Right.
So what he talks about is that and I think it makes sense, is that for most of human conversation, it's either been kind of one person dictating, you know, like the leader sort of thing, or it's what they call parallel monologues. One person is talking and the other person is thinking about what they're going to say in response to that person talking. And so no one is really listening. It's two people running their own monologues in their head. And what this is dialogue. It's one person talks, the other person listens. And then there's a whole process around that listening that involves mirroring back. It involves being curious about what the person said. It involves validation and empathizing. So it's a whole very holistic thing. And the person that's doing the listening, that's all they're doing, is the mirroring, the validating, the empathizing, until the first person is done. And then you change roles.
Am I romanticizing it to say that there was a time when we were better at this than we are now?
Maybe. I think maybe. I mean, because I would be willing to guess that in any period that you can think of, there's going to be that time where two people have a conversation and you think you're on the same page and you walk away and then you find out the next day that you had two completely different conversations.
Right,
You know? And that's happened, I think, throughout history.
I have a theory, though, that it's more – that the problem is bigger today for a couple reasons. And tell me – again, I could be way off. One reason, what you're talking about is active listening, right? It's an actual verb. Listening is a verb, and you're doing it. We do so much passive listening right now, whether it's like a listener of this podcast is doing right now, just listening without – can dial in, can dial out whenever, doesn't have to respond, although do respond, but doesn't have to respond. We do – so much of our listening now is passive listening that I feel like it spills over into our conversations. We listen to podcasts, we listen to TV, we listen to Netflix, we listen to even listening to music is passive listening. And I feel that because the percentage where in times prior our percentage of passive listening wasn't so high, I feel like the higher that percentage gets, the more active listening gets lost in the mix.
Right. So you're feeling that because there's so much more passive listening, that that has impacted our ability to actively listen even more than maybe throughout other times in history.
Right.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
I got that. It does make sense.
Okay.
It does make sense. I think, too, that that's also one of the things that I really believe is a strong point of this Safe Conversations project, is that it's not just about communication. It's about connection.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally how to build connection with another human being.
Right.
And using the Safe Conversation dialogue process and the sentence stems within that process are what helps you create that safe space that allows for real connection.
Also, when you want it, so much of communication today isn't, I don't care if it's safe. I just care that you get my point. and that's more, I have a, there's a guy who was on the show and he's a musician and I'm not Republican. I love Republicans. I probably have more Republicans on than Democrats when I have politicians on, but I'm not. So he found that out. And every day he sends me three or four memes on Facebook. And they're all Kamala Harris is part donkey. They're all – it's and without even an explanation or without – I don't know why other than and so much of communication – today is that way. It's just make your point and get out. So I think we have to start with, like, how do you create spaces where people even want that anymore?
Well, I think Facebook isn't the place to start.
I think you're right.
I think that that's going back to what you were saying. That's a place where you're not really connecting with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think you are, but you're not. You're connecting right. with the things that they post, and people feel a lot freer to be maybe not as courteous as you would be face-to-face.
Right.
Because it's kind of, even though you're there and people know who you are, there's also a certain level of, because there's distance,
right.
you can say things that maybe you wouldn't say to someone's face,
right?
And so what I think is that we need to try to get back to sitting across a table with a human being and start having actual conversations where when someone posts a meme like that, you can, or says something negative in that way, you can say, well, you know, I hear you're feeling negative about this person. Can you tell me more about that? Instead
right.
of going, no, you're wrong.
Right.
Because that's what we typically do, is we're in our own agenda. We're each in our own agenda. And then we just end up fighting and saying, well, you're wrong. No, you're
yeah.
wrong. And what good does that do anybody? None.
the creeping – I have a bunch of theories about this. Another theory, because the right-wrong thing that you just said is gigantic. It's a gigantic prohibitor. My dumb opinion, is gigantic prohibitor to effective communication.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that perhaps, especially over the last few years, when the magnetic field that we use to get our compass needle pointing north is science, and science is either right or wrong, and we have come to, and like going through COVID, for example, we sometimes survival is based on black and white, right or wrong. And I feel that because we have become so science-based and there's a right and wrong to science, we let that spill all over everything.
That's interesting because I hear you saying that because science is black and white, there's a right
supposed
and wrong.
Supposed to be, right.
Right? That has kind of spilled over into things being right or wrong. So what I think about science is that science is constantly learning and changing. So I don't see it as right or as black and white. I don't see science as black and white in that way, because you know, what we learn today about the body. So we've learned this much about our body or about our brains. But brain science particularly is constantly evolving. So it's not a solid, yes, this is the way it is, because science never says that about themselves. They right. say, you know, they're constantly exploring and new, learning new things. And they're saying, hey, we learned this new thing. And tomorrow it's, hey, well, we learned some more about that, that, you know, changed it a little.
Right.
So it's not so black and white to me.
No, that's a good way. That's a good way to look at it. I just kind of feel like we're sold science as black and white, though.
You think?
Yeah, I mean, like, you look at COVID, and it was trust the science or die, and that was pretty black and white. And I feel like, you know, we learn science in school, we don't learn it as, hey, this is what we know now. We learn it as, hey, this is what happened, and instead of, I think your perspective on science is right. I just don't think we're taught that. Science should be taught as, hey, this is what we know now, and it's going to change.
Right. It might depend on where you're taught.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I was kind of taught the way I just that. I mean, that's
then I should have gone to school where you went. Where'd you go to school?
Sardis.
Oh, okay. I went to Rhinebeck.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I can't really speak. I can speak to the science of this process, you know, there's brain science. This process is based in brain science. So I was just talking about brain science and, you know, the different parts of our brain. There's our reactive part, which is the lower, the mammalian, the lower brain, or they call it sometimes the reptilian brain, because we have different parts of our brain. And so that part of the brain is the part that does the knee-jerk reaction. That's the part that when somebody says something you don't like, you automatically go into defensive mode, and you think you got to say no, and start to defend, right?
Right.
And argue and know you're wrong. If you can shift out of that part and move into your frontal lobe by being curious and expressing curiosity, that even just the expression of curiosity, the act of the sentence stems in this process, bring you out of that and up to here. Because as soon as you have to think, as soon as you have to mirror back what someone said, you have to be paying attention and thinking about what they said in order to hear it and mirror it back accurately. As soon as you say, did I get that? You're checking them for accuracy. They have to then also be thinking, because they have to say, well, did you get it? Did you hear everything I said? So they can either say, yes, you got it, or no, you didn't. No, not quite. I also said this. And then there's more mirroring. And then the next is curiosity. Is there more about that? Is there something more you can tell me about that? That's all puts you automatically into your frontal lobe, into your thinking brain. And then you're out of that place that's going to fight and defend.
It requires a degree of security to be curious, and I wonder if that's a hindrance too, because I know so many people who just won't be vulnerable enough to be curious.
I think that's probably true. You know, that's the thing. When we're in a fear place, we can't be. When we're scared, we can't literally, our brains right. can't, because we're back here, we're not up here. That's why this process, when you learn these skills, there's literally sentence stems that you use. So the first,
what's a sentence stem?
A sentence stem is like, the very first part of the process would be, I'd like to speak to you about whatever it might be. Is now a good time? And you use those exact words. You fill in the blanks. Those the sentence stems are the, I'd like to speak to you about. Is now a good time? And in using those, and there's those all the way out on both, all the way through the process on both sides. So when the person who's listening, they'll say, yes, it's a good time. Then there's a, you know, you take some minutes to make eye contact and breathe and kind of calm your nervous system. And then you always start with an appreciation, because that moves it into a different space automatically. Even if you're talking about something that's frustrating to you, you start with an appreciation of the other person. And then you might say, okay, when I experience whatever, when I experience being interrupted, I feel like what I'm trying to say is not valuable to you. It's not, you're not it. I feel that there's no interest in what I'm trying to say when I experience. So that's, you might say that. And then the other person is going to say, their sentence stem is going to be, if I got that, and you always use that sentence stem, if I got that, when you get interrupted, you feel like the other person is not interested in what you have to say. Did I get that?
Okay.
They make sure. So those are the sentence stems. And the reason, there's four different dialogues that use those sentence stems. But, and they're each one wonderful. They're amazing. They actually, you learn so much about yourself when you do that and about your, whoever it is you're talking to, whether it's a partner, friend, family member. You learn so much more. You take it in more deeply. But the other thing is that doing those, that structure, doing the dialogues exactly, then means that when you go out in the world, you have those skills in your back pocket. You're not going to walk around with the papers and hand somebody to say, you know, and say, oh, can you read this while we talk? But you can use the sentence stems as you know them, as you've learned them, and as they're appropriate to whatever the conversation might be. And in that way, you're helping the other person feel safe, which in turn will help you feel safe.
Do you, my gut reaction to that is, I guarantee it works. It almost though seems, tell me where I'm wrong. It seems formulaic. Like if I'm with my wife and I say, you know, I made you lunch and you didn't eat it, which happened yesterday. I made this amazing egg sandwich and she brought it home and didn't eat it. It almost feels so formulaic to use those words that authenticity gets challenged?
It won't.
Okay.
It won't. It feels awkward. It most definitely feels awkward when you start to do it. It's not an easy transition to go from just the way we talk. But the thing is, if you say, if so there, just the difference. I made you a sandwich and you didn't eat it, right? That's going to feel like an accusation. But if you said, when I made you a sandwich and you came home and you hadn't eaten it, I felt like whatever it was you felt. I felt that you didn't care that I made you a sandwich, or it didn't matter to you that I made you a sandwich, whatever that might be. That keeps it about you. That keeps it about you feeling, and you're not accusing her of anything. You're just saying, when that happened, I felt a little hurt because I went to the trouble and...
That's key. You're not, you know, accusing. That's
never,
key.
You, so the,
right. That
so,
makes sense.
So the, it's not, there's so much more to it. There's the sentence stems, but there's also, you know, training yourself to always use I language. Never mm-hmm. you. Never you.
Right.
You know, always I feel, when I experience whatever, when this happened, I felt.
Is there room for humor in this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Sure.
Okay, because it would seem like it would be hard to work in a joke if I am starting every sentence with, like, the first five words are scripted and then...
Right. Well, I suppose it depends on what you're talking about, but yeah.
Right.
I mean, you know, you certainly can laugh and I mean, what happens when you do this is you actually create deeper, more joyful connections with the person in your life, and you're going to have more fun because you're not going to be always thinking, well, I did this and she said that, and oh my God, what was that about, and all the things that go through our minds, because we don't necessarily feel, even with someone we think we feel safe with, there's always little bits where the wall goes, this happens and the wall goes up.
Right.
It just, you know, it happens automatically.
You're probably the most vulnerable with people that you're the most safe with. Like, I'm probably most safe with Trish, but she knows everything and could topple the tower down in 10 seconds if she felt like doing it. So you're right?
I suppose, but, you know, the more you share of yourself, the more vulnerability. But, you know, to me, vulnerability is strength. You know, the more vulnerable you are, the stronger you are, too, because you're not having to, like, constantly.
Right.
You know, it takes a lot of courage to be vulnerable.
What got you into this?
what got me into this was a friend of ours had done this workshop with her, had done the original workshop with her husband, and she recommended it to me and my husband. And we decided to take it because, not because we were having any serious problems or anything, but we just thought our communication could be better, because those times where you walk away thinking, you know, okay, this was what we were on, you know, this happened, and then suddenly you realize, well, wait a minute, you thought I said this, and I didn't mean that, and that wasn't what I said. I don't think that's what I said, but it certainly wasn't what I meant.
Right.
And, you know, the, all that that happens in every relationship, whether it's a romantic one or a friendship one, I mean, it just happens
yep.
in any communication. And so we thought, you know, why not try it and see? And we found the process to be really profoundly changing and helpful for our own ability to communicate with each other. And, you know, we still, sometimes we use the full structure. Sometimes we just use bits and pieces. One of the biggest ones is making an appointment. So if my husband is working in the studio on some music, I might knock on the door and say, do you have a minute? Is now a good time to talk? And he can say to me no, or he can say yes. Mm-hmm. And that way, I'm respecting his boundaries and what he's doing, and vice versa. He'll do the same for me. If I'm working on something, he'll come in and he'll say, you know, do you have a minute? Is now a good time? And I can say, I need 5 minutes
because
right. I just want to finish this up. Or I need an hour because I'm in the middle of something big, you know,
right.
whatever. And that, just that alone, that respecting of boundaries mm-hmm. is such a big deal, because if you're in your headspace working on your whatever, you're working on a new song, right? You're
right.
working on a new song and somebody interrupts you and just starts talking at you. That's really difficult.
Or vacuums under you. It's a joke on the show. My wife, like, I can be practicing or working on a song or whatever, and my wife will literally, I sit on a stool and she'll literally be vacuuming under the stool.
Under the stool.
Yeah.
Right.
That's so brutal.
So, right. So, you know, any of those kinds of things that, you know, so just that asking for the appointment just that one alone is a big thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you, what did you learn about, what's the biggest thing you learned about your husband from doing this form of communication?
Wow, I don't know. The biggest thing. You know, the really interesting thing is kind of like what you said. We already know all each other's stories.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But when you start to put the pieces together of how those stories impact how you respond to different situations, then you start to really understand someone in a completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, back to the thing for being interrupted, I'm going to talk about me because he's not here.
Fair enough.
So back to the thing about being interrupted, that's actually has always been a big one for me. And it's been one I've had to learn not to do. And they're very tied together, because when I was a kid, I was the youngest. And when we sat around, you know, in those days, we still all sat around the dinner table and had dinner together. It was very difficult to get a word in edgewise. I was the youngest and everybody else would talk. And I'd try sometimes and then I'd give up. And so that creates two things. Number one, it creates the being interrupted and feeling like, well, okay, nobody wants to hear what I have to say, right? That's one piece.
Right.
But the other piece, the me being interrupting others, is because at this point I want to be heard so desperately, right?
Mm-hmm.
You feel like, okay, nobody, I want to be able to speak and be heard. And so I think that's a big one for a lot of people, because most people are more, they want to be heard so badly. And again, when you go back and you start to use this process and you start to use the mirroring back, once somebody knows you're actually going to listen to them, they don't need to interrupt you anymore because they know you're going to listen.
Right. The nature of communication is fascinating, because we do have this desire to be heard,
mm-hmm.
and it's so profound, it almost hampers our ability to listen.
Exactly. It does.
And so you it's counterintuitive, because because you're so driven to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
How do you tamp that down?
You learn how to do safe conversations.
Fair enough. Fair enough. This sounds like it would be, you know about mediation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This sounds like it would be a fantastic blueprint for mediation.
That would be a wonderful application of it, yeah.
And also, I always wonder why conflict resolution isn't taught in schools, but it sounds like this would be a wonderful platform for teaching conflict resolution as well.
I think so. You know, I think so because, you know, anytime you start to really listen to each other and you actually hear, because the other thing that happens in the dialogues when you're learning them is that you are always saying, this reminds me, when this happens, it reminds me of something in my past. So you're always learning about people. So you're learning the bigger picture, the bigger context of why this behavior happens or why they react in that way. You're learning a much bigger picture than you get just through day to day, right?
Right.
And once you start to do that, once you start to see that, that's what builds the validation and the empathy, because then you can go, oh, so you experienced this and you react like this because you experienced this. Well, that makes sense that that happens for you, even though I might not agree with it or I might not have that same experience. I can see that you had this experience and so you respond in this way. That makes sense and that must feel like whatever.
Right.
So it brings you to the validation and the empathy piece, which, you know, then you're really connecting. Then
right.
You're really connecting. And so it doesn't mean you agree. You do not have to agree with each other to be able to validate and empathize. But it does let you put yourself a little bit in their shoes and imagine what it must be like to have had that experience
right.
And respond in that way.
You ever been in couples therapy?
Uh-huh.
Me too. So I'm in couples therapy and the therapist, we didn't last in it, but the therapist said, all right, I want you to, your assignment for next time is to make a list of things that you're accountable for in the problems in your relationship. So I went back and I came back with like this legal pad full of stuff stuff I needed to fix. And so I went through my list and then the therapist went to Trish and said, and what's your list? She goes, I don't have a list. I didn't do anything wrong. And it – and I was struck then at that point in our lives, like she just didn't want to communicate. And I think – I almost wonder if this if your process – If injecting your process there, like saying, look, you don't even feel like communicating right now, but that's the only way this is going to get solved. So let's not even focus on the problem. Let's just focus on learning how to communicate. And then the problem will – believe me, the problem will work its way in.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. That does make sense. And that's kind of how this works because we don't – this isn't necessarily – well, it's not therapy. There is – they use this techniques. There are therapists who use these techniques in couples therapy. That's where it started, as you know. Harville
right.
Hendricks and Helen LaKelly Hunt started this whole process with their first book, Getting the Love You Want, and the
yep.
workshops of the same name. And so it started in that realm, and then it's moved out into this. But the idea is not that you necessarily, when you start the dialogues, you're not necessarily looking for a solution. What you're looking for is to hear and understand each other's point of view. And once you do that and you feel safer in that space of relationship, then solutions start to come up because you're actually listening to each other. You're actually trying to understand, rather than pushing your own agenda, you're trying to understand what it's like for her. And she's
right.
trying to understand what it's like for you. And because you care about each other and you care about the relationship, which is the space between is what we call it. There's you, there's me, there's the space between, and that's where the relationship takes place.
Right.
Because now you care about each other and you care about that relationship, there's also the idea of keeping that relationship free of negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And again, using the dialogues, and there's some other practices that help to do that. Then solutions will happen. They'll happen because now you both feel safe to talk. But if you don't feel safe to talk, you're
screwed.
Well, it's not easy anyway.
Right.
You know.
And I would imagine too that one of the barriers to communication when I'm not listening is I'm not taking anything in at all, and I'm not absorbing anything. And I would imagine that compromise becomes easier once I've at minimum absorbed a percentage of where you're at. That's fertile ground for compromise. Whereas if I'm not listening at all and I'm not absorbing any percentage of where you're at, then any compromise feels like I'm conceding rather than solving.
That makes sense. Yeah. So
I got one.
Yeah. No, you've got a lot. You're doing great. Yeah. So compromise is really hard. So what I'm hearing is compromise is really hard if for you. You're seeing that if you're not really listening and not really taking in what's being said, then compromise doesn't feel like compromise. It just feels like giving in.
Right. I'm conceding a point. Yes. Just to make peace, I will X. But I don't really think I was wrong.
Yes.
Or I don't really see your perspective. But
right.
Peace, you know, we got a kid. We have to work this out. And so you concede. And then over time, a history of concession gets to resentment,
mm-hmm.
gets to – and then nothing looks like what it really is. Yes. And now you have a whole different problem. So – the way you communicate is actually preventative medicine.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Because if you have to mirror back what Trish is saying to you, if you're going to mirror it back and say, if I got what you said blah, 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 whatever it might be, you have to hear what she said.
Right.
You have no choice.
and you, right. And well, I don't have any choice either. But the other thing that I bet this is really helpful for is, like, some people aren't good at making their point the first time they try to.
Mm-hmm.
So this develops that skill too, because if you're mirroring me all the time and nothing you're saying is what I meant, over time I'm going to get, well, wait, maybe the problem isn't you. Maybe the problem is I'm not.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you're actually mirroring me, you're letting me know that you heard what I said, but you're also teaching me to say what I mean.
Yes, exactly.
Because you're getting feedback now.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And you never, unless you're mirrored, you would never get that feedback.
Because
just what I said lives in your head and my head, and it's two different things, and I never get that feedback.
Right. And that's what causes the problems.
Right.
You live in your head, I live in mine, and if we don't take the time to really get curious and understand if I don't get curious about what's in your head and you in mine, we're not going to connect.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
Do you think musicians are better at this?
I don't know.
Because we're auditory, right?
We're auditory, but an awful lot of musicians are also solitary to some extent. And, you know, I mean, you know, when you're in a creative process, you can be very in your own head.
Right.
You know, you can kind of live up in there. So maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure.
Tell me a little bit about your musical life, because I want to have you back in just to focus on music, but just because you're here.
So I met my husband through music 30 years ago, I guess.
30 years.
Something like
that. How long you married?
We've been married for 26. We started out not as a couple. We started out musically. We met through a friend doing music. And my then not husband was writing his own music and performing with the Princes of Serendip. They existed before me. And at that time, it was a trio. It was T.G. Vanini, who's my husband, Danya Kulo, who played piano, and Alan Murphy, who played bass. Both of them are now deceased. And then I started. He was recording, and he asked me to do some backing vocals on the recording. And then then he started asking me to do get, you know, do you want to, we got a gig. Do you want to come do some backing vocals on the gig? So that's kind of how we started. And we just were friends. And then eventually we became more than that. So most of the music is original. Most is it's written by T.G. Vanini. And I do some writing. I'm way less prolific than he is at writing.
What's your process when you write?
For me?
Yeah.
I usually start just kind of vocalizing because I'm a vocalist. I don't really play an instrument. I did play guitar for a very little while, but I didn't start till I was in my 40s, and it didn't, for lots of physical reasons, it didn't last. So I don't, I've never really played an instrument well enough to compose on an instrument. So my instrument is my voice. And I usually will start kind of vocalizing, and you know, ideas come or they don't, you mm-hmm. know, and sometimes it'll turn into words. Sometimes it'll just turn into a melody I like.
Mm.
But usually it turns into words. Usually the two things come together.
Right.
Yeah.
These are my songwriter questions. Do you create it? Do you channel it? Is it given to you? Do you work with a muse? What's the source?
I haven't a clue. I really don't.
Isn't that incredible?
I really don't know because it literally, it's kind of one of those things that for me it either flows out or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been good at the, like, I know people who are very deliberate about how they write and they tweaking, and it's not that I don't do any tweaking of lyrics or anything, but like sometimes I'll get a great chorus and I just can never find the rest. I can't, no matter how much I sing it, I can't find what comes next. And it just doesn't. So it either all flows from wherever it comes from
mm-hmm.
or it doesn't.
The reason, oh, sorry, were you going
to? Nope.
Oh. So part of my rant on this show is the idea that, and it speaks directly to communication. The idea that we have words for all our feelings is hubris. We don't. We don't have words for a third of them, probably. And so when you communicate a feeling, that's especially hard. Like, we have a word for a wall, and everybody's wall, everybody knows what a wall is. There's 328 different degrees or variants of sadness, and that's just sad. And I counted them. There's 328. But so I find that, and this is why, I think music allows us to communicate a wider spectrum of feeling than speech does. Which is why I asked, like, do you think musicians are better at this? Which is, I should have explained the question before. Because I think to some degree we have a bigger vocabulary than somebody that doesn't.
Well, I don't think that necessarily makes us better at this, because you're still using when you're doing this, you're using words.
Right.
Part of what makes the bigger vocabulary with music is the music, the not words.
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Is the not saying right. with words, but
that's a whole different language.
But that's a whole different language. There's a thing that I do, lots of people do it, but I call soul singing, you know, where you just really letting, I do workshops with this too sometimes, I haven't in a while, but where you're just really allowing the expression of sound in whatever way, whether it's musical or not, whatever way it wants to come out, and that, you know, can kind of weave and become something. It's almost like, I think of it like sand painting, you know, like the Tibetan sand painting. It's like
yeah.
you weave this thing and then it's gone. You know?
Yeah.
And then it's gone. But that is a way of expressing emotion, because I think you're right. I think even in those 328 words for sad, not one of them actually captures the feeling for any one individual. It's the best we can do, you know, to describe a feeling. But
right.
those are kind of indescribable. It's just it's an experience, really. It's not, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so sometimes expressing something like that without words that's one of the beauties of music. But when you're trying to connect with another person in a relational way, you need to do your best with words.
Yeah. You're right. But I have like, there have been times like with Trish where if I'm not making the point and I find like a piece of music that can do it for me, mm-hmm. I'll just do that. And sometimes that works.
Yeah.
But you know, it's hard for her to mirror it back because she's not a musician. But she could say like, I get now that you feel epically sad or epically happy or whatever. How long does this method take to learn?
It doesn't take long at all. I mean, the workshop that I teach is about 4 hours. We go through a lot of the information about the background, the brain science, go more deeply into all those things. We do two of the dialogues. There's four altogether, but we just do two of them. And then once you do that, excuse me, getting hoarse.
Happens.
Excuse me.
It's dry
once
here.
Once you do that, you know, then it's a question of practice. Because that'll teach you the skills. You'll go home with two of the papers of two of the dialogues. Actually, I brought an appreciation dialogue with me if you want to try to do one with
Let's do it.
We can do it. Because you'll go home with some skills. And you know,
those would be welcome.
There's other things to learn, you know, in the 4 hours of the workshop, but basically you learn enough that if you dedicate yourself to practice, because it's like learning how to play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
If you pick it up and you learn the chords and you put it back down again and don't come back to it till a month, you're probably going to have to learn the chords all over again.
Yep, yep.
You know, so it's kind of like that. It's like learning any other new skill.
Right.
So this is the appreciation dialogue.
Fantastic.
And it goes through, so whoever is talking is on the left-hand side of the page, and the person who is listening is on the right-hand side of the page. So the dark blue with the, you can see.
Got it, yeah. Yep. Thank you for the large print.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And appreciation is just expressing something that I appreciate about you.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So do you want to speak first or do you want to receive first?
You're the coach. You tell me.
You speak first because okay. I'll show you how the mirroring and stuff goes.
Okay, great. So I start with, I would like to express an appreciation. Is now a good time?
Yes, now is a good time. And then we connect and make eye contact and we take three deep breaths because that helps relax the nervous system. Okay.
One thing I appreciate about you is the selfless nature of what you're teaching, because it is so hard when people get in a position to get out of their own head and consider what another person is even saying, and I think it takes a specific type of person to have that be a priority, and I appreciate that about you.
So let me see if I got it. You said something you appreciate about me is the selflessness that you feel it takes to do this kind of work, because working with people to help them get out of their own heads and, you know, into the connection takes a certain kind of dedication, and you appreciate that I have that. Did I get it?
You got it.
Is there more about that?
Yes. when I see you doing that, I feel grateful because I think it's bigger. I think it's a bigger skill than even communication. I think it teaches safety. I think you are creating for people a space where it's safe to do something other than blare out my own opinion and hope I break you. I think the more experience you have with safety, the stronger you become. And so I think I appreciate that you're improving communication, but I also think you're improving the wholeness of a person because you're creating safety where there wasn't any before or wasn't much before.
So let me see if I got that. When I'm doing this, you feel grateful because you see that it's about more than just communication. It's about creating safety. so that people have the opportunity to be seen fully, to get to see the whole picture.
Right.
Did I get that? Did I miss? I feel like I missed something. Did I miss something?
Yeah. Hold on. The part you didn't get was that it spills over way past communication, that once you have given me an experience where I go out on a ledge and expose myself and that feels good, now I can do it artistically, I can do it professionally, I can do it as a dad, I can do it when I'm working out, I can do it everywhere. And you change not just the communication but the person.
Okay. So if I got that, you also feel that this process then spills out past communication, and because once you've gone out on a ledge and felt vulnerable and been and then felt the safety of that and it felt good to do that, that means you can then take that sense of self, of safety, out into your artistic world, into your parental role with your kids, into your other relationships with your wife and other people in your community. And so it really spills out over into your whole life, and that feels really good. Did I get that?
You got that.
Okay. Is there more about that?
No, you got that.
Okay. So now your next one is when I feel. Reminds me of right. time. Yep.
So it's funny how this takes you down a very different road than the road you thought. Mm-hmm. So when I feel grateful, it reminds me of a time in the past when I didn't see much good in the world. And like my life has changed to the point where now I see so much good. But it reminds me, just connecting with you, it reminds me of that time when I didn't think people would do the kind of work you're doing. I didn't think people had that in them. I didn't think people cared. And so, so it reminds me of how big a change I've made.
Right. So if I've got that, you said when you're feeling grateful about the work that I'm doing, it reminds you of a time in your past when you didn't see much good in the world and probably didn't feel much connected, I'm guessing. And that reminds, and so it reminds you of that time in the past, and it also reminds you that now you're in a different place and you see much more good in the world and many more people than just me doing good work in the world, and so that feels good. Did I get that?
You're good at this. Yes, you got it. Yes, you did.
Is there more about that?
Nope, that's it. Yeah.
So if I've got all of that, you said, and to summarize everything that you said, something you appreciate about me is the selflessness that you feel it takes to do this kind of work, to spend the time to help people come out of their own heads and to learn about safety and connection. And you feel that this is about so much more than just communication. It's really about creating safety and connection so that and you feel like that will spill out into your whole life, that when you go out on a ledge, you know, with your own vulnerability in this process and realize that it's safe and it feels good, that then gives you more confidence to take that into the other parts of your life, your artistic life and your life with your children and your wife and anybody else in your life. And it makes you feel grateful because it is so much bigger, and because it reminds you of a time in the past when you didn't see much good in the world and that wasn't feeling very good. And it reminds you also that now things have changed so much in your life and you do see so much good in the world, and that feels good. Is that a good summary?
Take Julie's workshop, will you please? That's it perfectly, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all that with me.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. That's the process.
That's fantastic. You know, so you know what's an amazing part of this? And I'm sure I'm sure there's more, but it's amazing to try to connect it to a time in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Because that just it takes the energy in such a completely different direction that you wind up being heard but also self-reflecting.
Yes. So you wind up being heard and self-reflecting, which for the listener then, when you do that, when you relate it to something in your past, it makes that appreciation that much stronger, because it makes me see that it's not just about that you feel grateful or that you're appreciating that I'm doing this work. It's that it has an impact because of experiences that you've also had. So it's a lot different than just going, oh, thanks for making breakfast.
Right.
You know, right?
Right.
But if you're saying, wow, you made me this beautiful breakfast and it reminds me of breakfast I made, you know, that I had with my mom when I was a kid. And, you know, like, then it's like you've got a whole picture of why this is a big deal for you.
Right.
Why it feels important to say that appreciation.
Right.
Yeah.
It would be a career for, and I hope someday this happens, for you to be in family court. And for you to be in, political debate, and facilitate those communications, because if you get two people in a room, and like you and your husband, you both go through this training, you have a leg up because you both wanted to be there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I bet this is super important too for people who don't want to be there and who are just so dug in, and there's real world ramifications to be able to do this. This should be part of a law degree.
I think it should be part of, you know, where I would love to see it most is in schools.
Yeah.
I mean, everywhere, I would go anywhere with this that anybody wants me to come and do, any group, and it's valid for any, it's in a workplace. You can do the same kinds of things in a workplace, and appreciation in a workplace might be, I really appreciated what you said at that meeting this morning.
Yeah.
You know, or at any moment, you can use these skills in any situation. But in terms of impact, well, I'm anywhere right now, it's going to have an impact because it's so desperately needed. But I just feel like for us, you know, for you and me, I'm practicing this. This is still, because, you know, I'm 63 years old. I have a long pattern of communication to
takes a while to unlearn.
To unlearn,
yeah.
and to relearn something new. And it takes constant practice and trying to remember not to knee-jerk react, to breathe and say, wait a minute, like, don't speak yet, right? And listen back. It takes a lot of practice. So I feel like the sooner we can teach it to, you know, the younger you can learn it, the less you have to unlearn.
Right. No, that makes complete sense. It would also, I would love to do a study where you have two classrooms, and one classroom, a lecture is given, and the other classroom, a lesson is given with mirroring back,
mm-hmm.
and then give tests. And see what the difference in score would be.
That's an interesting thing, even like mirroring back what the teacher said.
Yeah, so that I know you got it.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting.
I bet the test scores in the mirroring class significantly.
Yeah.
Because it
– although it might be hard
– It might take longer.
It might be hard because – you know, you can't have, like, if you have a classroom of 30 kids and you say a paragraph, you can't have 30 kids mirror you.
No, but I can have one.
But you could have one or maybe two.
And I could do it every 3 minutes.
Yes.
And.
Yes. That's actually a thing in the dialogue, that what you just said, when you're teaching, you're asking the sender, the person speaking, to be as succinct as they're able, but, you know, sometimes it's hard to get everything out. So we have what we call the pause button. So if somebody is really going on and it's getting like, you know, I'm never going to remember everything they said, you can hold your hand up and say, can I just mirror back what you've said so far? Because you're going to give them the next chance by saying, is there more, to say more about it. And so there's this little pause button just to say, I want to make sure I'm getting everything. Can I mirror back what I've got so far? So that's kind of what you're saying. Like, if a teacher did short bits and said, mirror back to me, I bet it would help.
Right?
I bet it would.
Is there a place in the dialogue for feedback?
What happens is, so what would happen, like, like in this, I really should do an appreciation back to you.
Okay.
I could, you know, we could do it again and I would do one back to you. And like if you're talking about a frustration, like if you're, that's probably where it's the most, you're most going to want to have feedback.
Right.
But even, but in any of them, you switch roles. So normally,
okay,
right? So normally you would do, I mean, we just did that as a demo, but I would love to do one back.
Okay.
One back for you. But that'll give you a chance to mirror.
Well, you're going to find out how bad I am at this.
But there's always a chance because you always, because when one person is done, when the, once they're done and you've said thank you for sharing and thank you for receiving, then you switch roles, and then you would, then the next person would say, well, it depends. If you're talking with your wife, you might say, like, if she told you about something that was frustrating her or vice versa, then the, when that's done, then the, you would say, okay, when I, while I was listening to you, while I was listening to what you said and hearing what you said, this is what I was feeling. And then you would go, and so you, then you get to say what you feel about that. And I've done that. Actually, my sister and I have done that where, you know, because we have different perspectives on different events in our lives, right? And, you know, at one point we would have just disagreed about them and not really. But we've had times where we have now, I've really listened to her and mirrored back and really heard what she had to say. And then she did the same for me. And it completely changed our dynamic. It's like, you know, it really helped us because we love each other deeply,
right.
You know, and but it helped us connect in a new way without having to say, yes, your opinion, yes, what you see is right. And there's no, I'm not right and she's not right. We're both, I had an experience. This is what I had. You heard my experience. You had a different experience. I heard what you experienced. And it made, so, you know, given all the different things, those, it makes sense that it makes sense that we're different. We saw it differently. We're different people.
Right.
You know, two people going to the same movie are going to come out with different opinions about the movie.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, it's like, that's just life.
Yeah.
We're different. We're all different. And that's also what causes the most problems is because we're afraid of difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're afraid of difference. But if we can learn to be curious about difference instead of being afraid of it, it takes all the power away and allows. And then you can actually have an actual real meaningful connection with another human being, which is what we all desperately want, too. You
right.
know?
Yeah. And it's an intimacy builder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm.
So,
all right.
I would like to express an appreciation of you, John. Is now a good time?
No, come back for another show. Just kidding.
You actually could say that.
Right.
If we were out of time, you could you could say that, and I'd say, okay, fine, I'll come back anytime.
Great. Yes, now is a good time. Sorry.
So one thing I appreciate about you is your humor with this, but also your insight and your willingness to do this process with me on the air, you know, live. It's very wonderful.
Oh, thank you. All right, so then I say, all right, let me see if I've got this. You said that you appreciate my adding humor to this and also my willingness to broach the subject on the show.
Yes.
Did I get it?
You got that. And I also said that your willingness to even do this dialogue with me on the show, to bring the whole, to really do the process with me.
Off script for a second. It's amazing that I missed that. Like, that's how important this is. That we just talked for 45 seconds and I missed 15 seconds of it. That's how, back on script. But that's how important this stuff is, right?
Yes.
Like, I missed a third in 45 seconds.
Right. So you're going to mirror back that part. So you're going to say, and you also said.
Tell me what you also said again, because I got caught up in my point.
So I also said that I appreciate that you're actually doing the dialogue with me on the air.
Okay. So you also said that you appreciate the fact that we're doing the dialogue on the air.
Yes. You got that.
Is there more about that?
Yes, when you do that, I feel excited because I'm so excited about this whole process. And to see you get excited about it, too, just makes me feel great.
Okay, let me see if I got it. You said that this whole experience is getting you excited because you're already excited about this process, but now to see it spread and see me and other people, listeners, get excited about it elevates it even more. Did I get that?
You got it. Yes, you did.
Ah, great. Is there more about that?
No, you got that. And right. So when I feel this excitement, it reminds me of times in the past when, you know, before I did this to make a living, I did bookkeeping. I was a bookkeeping and accounting consultant for years. And I liked that work, but it didn't excite me.
Mm.
This feels like a calling almost. It feels like I love it so much. I feel so strongly about it that it's needed and it's so practical and effective. So it makes me grateful because I can remember not feeling that way about work I was doing.
All right, let me see if I got that.
That was a lot.
So no, let me see if I got it.
Feel free to ask for help.
Always. So what you said was that in addition to being excited, it makes you feel grateful because you had a career in a space that you liked it, but you weren't on fire about it. Yeah. And this you're on fire about because this is solving bigger problems and the whole world needs this. And so it ramps it up even more for you. Did I get it?
You did. And I also said that one of the reasons I like it so much is that it's very practical and effective.
Off script again. It's like you're a trained listener, so you're good at it. It's amazing how bad I listen for a living. It's amazing how bad how much you miss unless you do this.
You're not bad at it.
Well, okay.
You're not bad at it.
Well, thank you. But still, so but even in this little exercise, it's incredible to reflect on the fact that we talked for 3 minutes, and in that 3 minutes, I missed parts of it, mm-hmm. and I'm a communicator for a living, so you would think I would have a skill set in this area. So maybe even having whatever skill set in this area, you still miss a ton unless you do this.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Yes.
How do we hire you? Oh, wait, am I done? Or I got to do the summary?
Okay. Got to do the summary.
All right, let me see if I got all that. And I guarantee I didn't. Let me see if I got all that. You said that you appreciate my willingness to broach the subject on the show and heighten awareness of this path of communication. You said that you appreciated that I bring humor to it because I'm insecure. You said that you appreciate that I brought humor to it and that you appreciated whatever insights I had into it. Mm-hmm. You said that it made you grateful because there was to have this be your living now because you spent a career in a space that didn't ignite you, and now you see that this is a global need, and it excites you even more when you see me and listeners get excited about it because that just elevates it even higher for you. And you said that you are also excited because it makes you see the practicality of it, how it's applicable universally. Did I get it?
You got it.
Smoke. Yeah, there you go.
Good job.
Oh, thank you so much.
You got it.
Awesome. Thank you. Oh, wait.
So thank you for sharing.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, and thank you so much for listening.
Oh, that's really – you're right. This should be taught in school. It really should because you – oh, there you go. You miss so much without it. How do I hire you?
I have a website. I start – my business is called Listening Ways, and my website is listeningways.net.
Okay.
So that's probably the best way to contact me.
Okay.
Like I said, I'll go to get together a group of 4 or 6 people, and I'll come.
Okay.
And do a workshop, and we'll
– municipalities, we'll if you're listening?
Anywhere.
I'm having a ton of politicians on this next month because yeah. It's elections. Politicians, if you're listening, this would be great for municipalities. Educators, this would be great for schools. It's great for team building. Great for people whose relationships are a little rusty. Universal.
Yeah. Parents and kids.
Yep.
Anywhere.
So
anywhere.
Julie Parisi and listeningways.net, right?
Yep.
I got that right?
Yes, you
I
did.
I listened.
You did.
There you go, man.
You did. Thank you so much, John. This has been so fun.
No, thank you so much for doing this. And come back and do some music, too.
Yeah, we'd
and
love to.
We can do the second part of the dialogue, too, if you want. All right.
That sounds great. I would love to.
All right. We'd awesome. Listeningways.net. Go. And I'm John. That was Home From Here. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It went
you,
well?
It went great, yeah.
Oh, you, fantastic.
You made me feel very comfortable and safe.
Oh, good.
And, yes.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.